Hey everybody, welcome to the Vet Tech Tap Room. This is our spin-off series from the Vet Tech Cafe. These episodes are live and uncut, discussing hot topics in our field, or talking about previous episodes amongst ourselves, and always highlight something positive happening in our profession. These episodes will be published as regular podcast episodes and will also be available on our YouTube channel as well. So get yourself a beer or a potato water and find us live on Instagram and join the discussion. Now if you'll excuse us, those are our beers the bartender is pouring. Hey, caffeinators, welcome into the Vet Tech Tap Room, where your favorite beverage is always available and, frankly, free of cost. Beers are on Dave tonight.
On me.
I don't know about you, Dave. I'm having a Halo IPA. It's a local brewery here in Anaheim. Okay. They make an IPA for the Angels. They only brew it during baseball season.
That's cool.
And they make a beer called Duck Beer. It's a blonde that they do during duck season. So they do one for the Ducks hockey team too.
I'm having Sam Adams Porch Rocker.
Great beer. Warm spring day beer. And I'm watching the Angels on my phone. They're actually winning. Mike Trout hit a home run. So I felt like this was appropriate.
I have the Red Sox on, but I'm avoiding looking at it right now because they're not playing great this year. So
here we are.
Only thing that will interrupt a baseball game for us is a tap room. So
yes, true that. So we got a couple things to talk about, but first let's do our little new fun dinner party questions. Kind of our kickoff.
You want to go first?
Yes. And I wish I could remember what I asked you last time to make sure I'm not asking the same thing.
I think you asked me what karaoke song I would sing.
Ah, okay. Well, shoot. Then that's going to kind of be along the same lines what I have in mind. So I'll tell you what. Why don't you ask me, and I'm going to quickly find another one.
Okay. All right. So is there anything you used to like when you were younger that isn't cool, so now you deny ever liking it? Taylor Swift doesn't count.
No.
Because you don't deny that.
No, absolutely not. I proudly boast that from the mountaintops. I would say, what did I really like when I was younger that's no longer cool and I'm kind of like ashamed to admit? Something like that.
I can't think of anything that I – because I freely own all the stupid stuff I used to like when I was younger.
For sure. Maybe Milli Vanilli.
Okay. All right.
That was like one of the first concerts I ever went to, and
so, that's a good one. Yeah,
and that just kind of comes off the top of my head. So maybe I'll go with that.
We'll stick with Milli Vanilli. I like it. That's good.
Yeah. Let's see here. I'm gonna go with. Do you have a favorite family tradition?
It's a favorite because it's weird and off the wall, and it's one of those things that until I got together with somebody outside of my family, I didn't realize how weird this is. But to me, growing up, it was a completely normal thing.
Sure.
Around the holidays, you have like hard candy or mm-hmm. Christmas candy out. The thing that I don't know where this started. I have to ask my mom where this started. But we had those, they're like those chalky mints.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So mints and salted peanuts mixed together in a bowl and just eat them by the handful.
Wow.
And Robin saw that at my mom's house the first Christmas we were there. And she's like, what is this? Yeah. nobody does this. And I wouldn't say it's something that I really like, but now because it's so bizarre and the story behind what a weird thing that my family does that I didn't think was weird because I mean that was a tradition from
what you did.
The moment that I knew what Christmas was.
Wow.
They were mints and nuts.
Mints and nuts. I love both individually and often eat both individually, but I have never considered doing so.
I mean, you'll have to try it. I don't know how to explain the flavor or
yeah.
It's just a weird thing. And now when we go up to see my family, they're the mints and nuts, aren't we? We just eat them and laugh at
we
it because
just do it.
it's just a weird thing.
Is that like a New England thing, or is that just like a Cowan family thing?
I don't. My dad is from New England. My mom is from Pennsylvania. So maybe, maybe it's a New England thing. I don't know where it started. The other weird thing that we did as a tradition, and this is kind of goes back into my childhood, is I convinced my family to not do, was it Christmas or Thanksgiving at my grandparents' house, because before dinner there's always like a little juice glass of tomato juice, and we had to drink it, and I hated it. Absolutely hated it, to the point where I was like, maybe we could just stay home for this holiday. And absolutely terrible. It's the reason I don't like Bloody Marys, is because of that. Uh-oh. Did I lose you? I think I lost you.
Yeah, I was gonna say I you were frozen there for a lot of that. I didn't catch a
You
lot of
spaced
that.
out for a little bit.
Yeah.
That's right. We'll edit it out.
All right. Great.
We don't have to go back.
Yeah, it's all good. So we got a couple other things we want to talk about here that are making the rounds a little bit. And one I've seen certainly very prominently. The other I actually heard from my wife. Of course, many of you guys know she's an emergency veterinarian, and she doesn't do a lot of social media, but she follows a couple of accounts, and it's just so she told me kind of about this ongoing feud between a veterinarian and a human cardiologist. And so let's dive in here. Let's start first with the New York Times, I guess survey maybe is the right word, or
It says it was a survey, but it's more of an article. And the thing that I didn't like was how they worded it. Were you stuck with a big vet bill?
Yeah.
Which that makes it seem like, almost makes it feel like the vets are like not giving estimates and surprising
Right.
them with these big bills that they weren't prepared for.
Right.
Where I can't speak for every practice, but every practice that I work in, estimates go out and get
Yeah.
approved.
Yeah.
There's not like a huge like sticker shock of when you get the bill of like, oh my God, I didn't realize it was going to be this big.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Most practices that I work in get estimates as time goes on,
Yeah.
where they get
Absolutely.
updated and all that stuff. So,
Absolutely. Yeah. Certainly there is sticker shock associated with a lot of this
oh,
stuff, but a
sure.
lot of times that's before the bill has actually been accumulated or what have you. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see where this goes. I know a lot of people are very concerned, and I think, well, I would hope that there is some responsible journalism where they'll speak to some, I mean, this is New York Times, so hopefully they'll speak to some major animal hospitals in the New York City area and kind of look at it from the other side too and see what, see what's what from our end. But it's I don't know, the wording here is certainly a little bit concerning about, how differences in insurance between animal and human, and also like maxing out credit cards, things of that sort. So
Well, and I've seen people posting it on social media about this is a poorly, I don't say poorly timed, but poorly executed
yeah.
article. I even Namvi, I saw the Not One More Vet. I forget where I saw that. It must have been on Instagram that listed like, here's five other things you could have done
Yeah.
of talking about like, how about the vet shortage? How about the tech shortage? How about the
Right.
suicide rate? How about all these things
Right.
that are true problems for us, as opposed to I got stuck with a big vet bill,
As
which.
opposed to essentially causing another new problem in
Exactly, yeah.
yeah. So I don't know. I'll be very curious. I don't even know how long it'll, I mean, it might be a year before whatever this is a published article. I'm sure we'll hear more about it then. But what I would encourage anybody listening to this, get your family members to or friends to write in and share these experiences or share their thoughts, in a, especially if you know that it's a positive experience. Because if it's 1,000 people that respond to this survey and it's all doom and gloom,
That's
that's what they're going to print. But
what they're going to report, yeah.
the more, and the more that we can get some positive things in there as well, and then if they report the doom and gloom, then that's on them. But truly, if that's all they've gotten, then that's all they really have to
go on. Well, it's kind of like the Google reviews or the Yelp reviews, where the positive reviews aren't there because when you get good service, you usually don't make a comment about it. But when you get bad service, you shout off about it. So that's what I'm worried about. And the other thing that I noticed was that usually with a New York Times article, they're blocked by a paywall. And this one, probably because they're trying to gather information, it's not blocked. So that was surprising to me. And also in this, it's also asking, what is the name of your vet? Like, how about keeping that part anonymous?
Absolutely.
I mean, you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah. Let's not, you know, unless they're going to do some research and actually contact that vet and say, hey, like, what would you want to comment on this or what?
Well, and doing that is never going to have a good outcome.
Right.
That's
right.
always going to be a negative.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's very difficult to like,
yeah,
it's very difficult to kind of engage in some of that stuff because it's hard to like show your side of the story and not have it thrown back in your face of how terrible you are, which.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so.
And then the other one was the one that Molly showed you?
Yes. And so this Instagram
account.
I hadn't
seen this one until you showed me.
Okay. So her Instagram handle is Dr. Molly Says. It's not my wife, Molly. It's a different Molly. And she does a lot of like really good educational posts. She actually does a lot of really good content. And so there was a post, and this post she made 6 days ago, and it was a post from a human cardiologist. His name is in her post. I won't say it on the air here, but he talks in his reel or video about how
he's
big the scam.
Is he a cardiologist? Is
he's
that
a
his
human
deal?
Cardiologist.
Yeah.
And his post is about what a huge scam that veterinary, not diagnostics, but lab work specifically cost.
Right. Right.
And he goes on to say, like, they draw the blood, they send it out to a lab, like, where is this giant cost incurred? Why is there such a huge markup? Blah, blah, blah. So in her kind of response to it, she found him online, found his office, and called to ask him or ask his billing department about some common tests that we might run on patients, but on the human side, what they actually cost. And so she talks about EKG interpretation, which is crazy high. She talks about some other stuff too that's much higher in veterinary medicine. And her point is, where's the scam? Well, they have actually continued to engage each other on Instagram, and it's mostly been pretty civil, but there's also been a lot of comments back and forth about, you know, like people, you know, when somebody comes up with something that fits somebody else's narrative and basically justifies their line of thinking, they're going to jump on that train. And you know, but she's highlighted several comments and all through her stories really all week. It's been a little bit of an interesting back and forth because it's just another thing. Like, this is a human physician who's talking out of turn basically. And like, If you're curious about where these things come from, just ask. Like, don't take it to a public forum like this and just call it a scam without actually doing some work here.
Well, and quite honestly, you know, this is a tap room, so I'm gonna get a little colorful here. The balls on this guy to call out prices in the veterinary world when you are a human cardiologist, like.
Yeah. When truly, like, everything you run other than a copay is going to be covered by insurance. Like,
exactly.
You know exactly, or at least when I go see, I have heart condition. I see a cardiologist twice a year. I get a stress test and I get an echocardiogram twice a year. My cardiologist knows exactly what my insurance will cover. Like, so, and if there's something where, like, he needs to run a test where it's like, your insurance is going to cover it. It's going to cost this amount of dollars, or insurance will only cover it. Like, they know exactly where their patients stand. We don't have any of that information. And obviously the insurance model is completely different.
Oh, very,
It's just, again, it's so unfortunate. And then all that does is bring ammunition to people who are looking for somebody to basically spit out their narrative and like justify their thoughts and feelings on all of this, and it just digs the hole a little deeper. And
I mean, how many times have you heard of like people going to the ER for a scrape or a wound of some sort, and they get essentially a Band-Aid and then get a $5,000 bill? Like
oh yeah,
who is a human cardiologist to say that our prices are scam? Like
right, yeah.
Oh my god.
Or let's talk about medications. I just started a new migraine medication yesterday. I'm now taking the Qulipta, which is one of the new to market drugs. Thankfully, my insurance covers it. I paid $0 for my 30-day prescription at Walmart, but the pharmacist, because it was a new medication, he said, you know, kind of got to go over, you know, side effects and what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, "You have really good insurance because this medication is crazy expensive." I didn't ask what a 30-day supply would cost without insurance, but probably a couple $100. So you want to talk about how much human cardiac medications cost versus furosemide, you know, or pimobendan, which sure can be expensive, but like, come on. Like,
yeah.
Or cardiac surgeries. Like,
yeah.
Let's get down to brass tacks here, pal, because.
And the other thing that, you know, I was thinking about this today, you know, in prepping for having this conversation, is that VetMed, we do not do well with policing ourselves.
Right.
But when somebody tries to police us, that's when we all come together and we all kind of pile on, and we are very defensive of our profession. I just wish we had that same passion and that same unification when it came to things like title protection.
For sure.
What we're going to be called. I wish we had that same type of unity when we're fighting against someone that's saying our prices are too high, when we're most of us are living paycheck to paycheck. And I mean, come on. Unbelievable.
So anyway, if you kind of want to follow along or jump in and share your experiences or talk again, her Instagram account is Dr. Molly Says, like SAYS, Dr. Molly Says. Mm-hmm. And she also just has a lot of really good content. So honestly, give her a follow and show her some support. Because she is actually defending this in a very logical way.
Well, and you have to. You have to defend it logically. You can't just yell about it.
Right. You have to defend it logically with factual data. And again, you know, there are just people that once their narrative has been purported, there is no science or data or evidence that's going to change their mind anyway. So be it. But so anyway, very interesting. One other thing that I wanted to talk about, and I forgot to mention this to you when we were talking about what we were going to talk
about. Spring
it on me. So I'm springing this on you. So as everybody knows, I work for the Animal Poison Control Center. And I overheard a conversation the other day. So I had a caller on the line, and I don't even remember what the pet got into, but they were going to induce vomiting at the vet hospital. And he's already in the lobby. And a lot of times I don't want to say I get interrupted, because at a vet hospital, they're trying to do things and get things going. But so they come and talk to the owner and go over things while the phone line is open, and I overhear the entire conversation, because there at the vet, that's the more important conversation. Let that all happen. So I'm overhearing this conversation, and they're basically getting permission to induce vomiting, but they also just spring on the guy about DNR versus CPR. And like literally this person's, and I don't know what her role was in the clinic, whether she was CSR, assistant technician, could have been a veterinarian, I don't know. But it was like, we don't expect this to happen, but you know, we need you to sign whether you want resuscitation or DNR. And the guy was like, "What? I don't understand." And that was her pitch. Nothing about like, so we're giving an injectable medication. We don't ever expect anything like this to happen, but sometimes reactions can occur. Like, we don't know. Like, there was just no explanation of why, number one, that he needed to sign either yes to CPR or no to CPR. But it was also, if you want CPR, it was $1,500. And there was, again, I don't care about the cost, but like that's how it was presented to him. Like, you know, we don't expect this to happen, but if your dog arrests, do you want CPR or not? If you want CPR, it was $1,500. And like, that was the, and again, I'm just listening. I'm waiting for him to finish this conversation so that I can finish up with him. And truly, if I recall correctly, all they needed to do was induce vomiting on the dog, and whatever it was came up, like he was going to be able to take the dog home.
Yeah, yeah.
And while that's still, again, that's an important thing to do with that owner, but we need to be mindful and train our people in how they are presenting this information. Because me hearing it on the other end of the line, I absolutely understand why that owner would be clueless. I absolutely understand why that owner would think then, like, what the hell is going on at this hospital? Like, why, like, you're inducing vomiting on my dog. Why am I talking about CPR?
Yeah.
Like, there was zero discussion or education about this stuff. And, like, if you don't want to talk about it in that moment while you're getting permission to induce vomiting, fine. Like, whatever your hospital protocol is. But you also can't just spring this on clients and expect them to grasp it in that 3-second conversation,
right.
And also just expect to be like, okay, I don't know why my dog is going to die with this, but I'm okay spending $1,500 if he needs CPR. Like,
yeah,
what made me think of this again is that you kind of saying like, we need to be better about, you know, putting this energy towards making ourselves better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big thing too, is like, step outside of that conversation for a minute and just watch that conversation from across the room. Listen to it like I did, just as a third mm-hmm. party, kind of eavesdropping on what's going on. And it should alarm anybody in our field that this is how this conversation went. And look at your practices and protocols and find out, like, are we actually educating clients in the correct way? Are we bringing this information to them properly? Are we doing it at the right time? Are we doing it in the right way? Like, because I truly feel, and I felt this for a long time, that's one thing veterinary medicine is really bad about. And it's a communication thing, but it's also a training thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
there are certain people that should be having those conversations that are educated enough to answer clients' questions, and it should take place in a little bit more controlled environment. It really took me aback, because it was like, gosh, I'm so glad I don't work in clinic anymore. But also like this person, they're not doing anything wrong. Like, that's what the hospital wants them to be doing. But in my opinion, they were going about it in a completely incorrect and inappropriate way.
Well, they could have just been very easily just reading off the form and just reading off, this is what it says. And also, I mean, not to go off on a sidetrack, but I can't imagine what you could possibly do during CPR that would get the bill up to $1,500. Like, I understand, yes, it's a team effort. There's a lot involved. It's life or death, obviously. But I cannot imagine a scenario where I was doing CPR where the bill for just CPR would get to $1,500. But that's a whole side discussion. I understand. Some hospitals have a set price that's just a flat rate for CPR. But I mean, to throw out, okay, we're going to make your dog vomit and probably get you some anti-nausea medication, some sub-Q fluids, and send you home. Or it could be an extra $1,500 because your dog's going to die.
Right, right.
Like that's, I mean, going back, we've had many people that have talked to us. The most recent one that I can remember is Doc Jim talking about the soft skills.
Mm-hmm.
That is 100% a soft skill. And you and I are not – I'm in clinics a lot more than you are, but probably not as much as I used to be. But those conversations probably happen all the time, and they're kind of like – I don't want to say they're background noise to us, but they're not something that we typically think about.
Right.
In terms of how that comes across to the client, and just being out of the situation of being in clinics all the time, hearing that is jarring, because you're like, oh, that's how you're going to say that? That seems kind of weird.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a soft skill out that I think needs to be taught either in that practice or in tech school or somewhere. that yeah. needs to be communicated yeah, that that's and, not and the way
I
to say
that,
it.
I think that's all it is somebody just saying like, hey, this is not the way we, you know, and again, I think that comes down to that practices culture and management mm-hmm. and leadership to say, hey, that's not how we want this information presented. Yes, we right. want the end result to be the same. They need to sign the form.
Yeah.
Do they need to do it in that moment? Do we need to have that conversation in that moment? That's up for debate, but we probably need to find a better way to communicate and educate in that moment. Like you said a moment ago, I'm not in clinic anymore. I know things are very different, but there's like you still those are still conversations that you have every day, and that there's for sure a much better way to engage in that. Just because again, I could hear my caller's reaction to it. You know, like it just. He's trying to talk to me on the phone. She's trying to talk to him in person. Like, there's so much going on. But when you just say it, like, that plainly, that matter of fact, with really no explanation, there's really no way for a lay person who has no medical training to understand that at all.
Well, and quite possibly the person that was relaying that information could very well have been a CSR that
sure.
doesn't have medical training.
Yeah.
Which, again, that goes back to soft skills. They need training too. They need to be understanding what they're telling people. Other than I don't know, because if somebody were to question that person, what is this $1,500? They'd say, I don't know. That's just what it costs.
Yeah.
And have zero information. And what does that do to that practice? That makes that practice seem like they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what their charges are.
Right.
So that. Stuff needs things, especially things with big charges like that associated with them, need to have things spelled out on why this is.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, like I could see if this caller was into doing that kind of thing, I could absolutely see him making a video and putting it on Instagram, much like that human cardiologist about this interaction. And then having heard the conversation, I would say, like, you're completely justified. What that person is trying to relay to you is as well, they're just doing it in a poor way.
And that's the
gap that we need a bridge for. And like, and to me, that's always been a very rampant problem in veterinary medicine. As long as I can remember, is just the way some of that information is presented and the people presenting.
Well, it sounds like, you know, just outside looking in, it sounds like that statement was made just as calmly and as plainly as we need to induce your dog for vomiting to get whatever it was up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And making it sound like it's an innocuous thing in that simple procedure, no big deal.
Right.
Also, it could cost an extra $1,500 because we may have to do CPR, which, I mean, that needs to be. That needs to be discussed a little bit more in depth, especially if you're going to associate. It'd be one thing if they said we want to know if something does happen. I think the big takeaway that I have is that they put the price on it.
Yeah.
Like if they just said, do you want CPR or do not resuscitate?
I guess one question I have too is it commonplace to talk about CPR when the person is in your lobby, hasn't even seen the veterinarian yet, and the person is there just getting permission to induce vomiting? Like the dog hasn't even gotten his vitals checked yet.
Right.
Like, is that the appropriate time to start talking about CPR?
I guess in my experience, you have that question if your patient is coming in hit by car, trauma.
Oh, absolutely.
You get
an emergency authorization.
Right. But the other part of that, you know, a dog that ate something that needs to be induced to vomit, that conversation doesn't even happen until we're saying, okay, we need to admit he's going to be in the ICU.
Right.
If something happens because he's in the ICU, what do you want to do?
That's what I'm more familiar with.
Like I said, unless it's a trauma, I don't typically ask for CPR DNR on triage.
Right. Right. Yeah. Unless it's something I was expecting to go that direction
or
thought it was a real possibility. And
unless
you know,
I'm saying we need to do CPR. Do you want us to?
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. And so I was very shocked at that, you know, hearing that kind of over the phone, because again, I literally was talking to the guy as he was exiting his car, sitting down in the lobby, and was getting triaged, and that was all on initial triage.
Yeah.
And like, yes, we like, I still sent him into the vet because he needed to have vomiting induced in the dog, but that was probably all that was going to be needed if whatever it was actually came back up. But like, so I was very surprised that conversation took place in mm-hmm. that manner, but also in that time frame when, like, literally the guy had been in the hospital for 30 seconds and hadn't seen a veterinarian yet. Like, I think it's another one of those things that we as veterinary medicine don't do ourselves any favors, because that's essentially how that clinic in that moment has presented veterinary medicine. And
You're asking for backlash,
right?
Backlash.
Yeah.
Backlash.
Yeah.
I swear, it was my first one.
Yeah. So anyway, so I had forgotten I was going to bring that up this tap room too as well, because I get in that situation a lot where I'm talking to people as they're in the exam room with the staff mm-hmm. or what have you. And so I overhear a lot of these conversations. And I think, like you said, it goes back to what Doc Jim said about soft skills and stuff. And I am frequently taken aback, like, wow, like, mm-hmm. Wow. Like, that is not the way I would have handled that conversation or that situation.
I wonder, like, I guess we'll put it to the caffeinators. Tell us in the comments, what is your CPR protocol? What do you tell people? When do you tell them that?
Yeah. Do you, if you have a pet coming in that, you know, you want to induce vomiting on, do you just get permission and do you just run it by the veterinarian and do it, like, how that flow is? And also, like, do you have a CPR conversation with owners in that moment or, you know, and I can see certain scenarios, like if I'm trying to get an avocado pit vomited up out of a pug. Yeah, I might want to have an airway obstruction CPR kind of discussion, because that's a dog that could have a problem. But, like, that's the critical thinking that I like to think that I brought to the profession or the job that mm-hmm. I had, not just this is the way the hospital does it and this is what we do across the board. But I just felt like that's not the right time and place to have that conversation, and not the right way to do it.
It's probably been a while since I've seen a GDV, but thinking back, like, to the times that I've taken in GDV dogs on triage, most of the time I'm not asking for CPR status. I'm asking, can I take an X-ray?
Yeah. Permission to get some baseline stuff going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stabilization
Stabilization.
The clinic I worked at, we had an emergency authorization, which was, I mean, it was expensive, but it was like very basic baseline diagnostics, you know, catheter starting fluids. Like, it was, you know, emergency kind of resuscitative or triage type things.
And it's like flat rate of like $750 or $1,000 or something like that. Stabilization.
But it was just those things. But, like, and then if it was something where we were like, your dog could arrest, like, do you want us to move forward?
Right.
Then, like, you know, we would pull them aside and have that conversation, you know, in an appropriate way, or at least, like, if you don't know right now, be prepared, be thinking about it, because we might come back and ask you about it. So, like, yeah, it was disappointing, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and there, I mean, we could talk about 18 million different scenarios.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
When to say what and when not to say anything, but I'm curious to hear if people respond what their CPR policies are and as I'm doing more CPR training, I've got some more CPR training and recovery training coming up. That's something I'm going to ask people. What do you guys do?
I think that'd be a great thing to, like, to start out. Like, how do you guys have this conversation with owners? And honestly, as part of the CPR training for the staff, role play and, like, go through with your staff how to have that conversation with the owners.
Yeah.
Your pet has arrested. Do you want to do CPR? This is what CPR means. These are typical survival rates. Your pet is at risk for CPR. This, like, how do you have those conversations? Because they, we think about them as very cut and dry. It's very black and it's very white. when you're on the receiving end of that, that's not the case in a lot of times. Yeah. So, yeah, very interesting stuff.
Get your soft skills. That's the takeaway.
That's the takeaway. Yeah. So, I think that was the only other thing I had to bring up. So
that was all I had. I just wanted to shout out that we as a profession will fight tooth and nail when somebody outside comes at us, but when it comes to fighting, we're I guess we're just as bloodthirsty at going after each other than we are going at outside forces. But I'm just still baffled that a human doctor had something to say about veterinary.
Yeah, I mean, truly, the audacity with the like the known expense of human medicine.
Yeah,
like obviously. Like, we don't, if you have insurance or if you have good insurance, like, a lot of times you don't see the final numbers, or maybe you do, but, like, it's astronomical compared to veterinary medicine. So, like, I don't get it anyway.
Yeah, and there's people that go into lifetime of debt over medical stuff for parents, grandparents, what have you, and just the audacity to, like, call out. And lab fees, because lab fees are essentially we pass on what we get charged.
Yeah. There's like a very standard markup, but it's like it's not exorbitant.
No, and I think Molly said something about like a stress test where you run on a treadmill for like 2 minutes and it's like $1,500. Like seriously. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Get real.
Yeah, absolutely. So.
All right.
Well, caffeinators, we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Tap Room. Please comment below with what your kind of protocols are. And frankly, if you feel like it works, if you feel like it needs tailoring or what have you, we'd love to hear about it. As always, follow along, like us, subscribe to us on all of the channels. We really appreciate your support. Patreons, thank you very much for supporting.
Forgot to mention that we've got our May episodes coming up that we've
recorded. Can throw that in here real quick. So we recorded our May episodes for Mental Health Awareness Month, which is going to run the month of May. So this year the calendar falls. It's only two episodes that we have this year, but they're both really great episodes, and they're actual
great guests.
They're RVTs, and they're actually both VTSs who are now moving the realm of helping other veterinary workers with mental health issues. So, really, really fascinating discussion, and it's actually from RVTs and VTSs this time. So, really, really cool stuff. So, definitely check those out. We hope you enjoy them. It's always a really, really important series for us. So, yeah. All right, guys. Take care. Cheers. Have a great Sunday night, and we'll talk to you guys again soon.